In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tugi Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Officer Radio brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today we'll be talking about social media and how it impacts or interacts with law enforcement, and perhaps more importantly, how we interact with it, how we leverage it, how we use it to our best advantage while not falling into any of the traps that surround it. And there are some. Joining me on today's show will be a young lady named Krista Miller, who is the social media monthly columnist for Officer.com. She's an expert on various forms of social media, how it can be used, how it can be abused, and what we need to stay cognizant of as we venture into the virtual world. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from you listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial me up. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, feel free to send me an email. The email address is frankborelli@officer.com. No dits, dots, dashes, or spaces, all one word, frankborelli@officer.com. Please call or send me an email. If you have a question, thought, something you want to share, let us know. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. It's on the radio page almost immediately. It's on the podcast page in about an hour or two usually. To find it for reference or future listening, just go to Officer.com. On the top navigation bar, click on the Media Center. In our Media Center, click on the blue navigation bar. You'll see the link for Officer.com radio right next to the link for our podcast library. Either one will work. Bookmark them if you think it's good to have as for reference, or if you want to refer it to somebody else to listen to, or if you just like something you heard and want to hear it again. Speaking of like something you heard and want to hear again, next Thursday is Thanksgiving. We're not doing a live show. We are going to be replaying the show from September 15th, which was about honoring the fallen. The guests on that show were Mr. Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, was Mr. Chuck Canterbury, the president for the National FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, and Mr. Bill Finnegan, who started an organization to honor fallen heroes, actually to honor the heroes before that haven't fallen. His organization honors all public safety workers for what they do day in and day out. Our archive shows are also available on iTunes, so if you hear one you particularly like, you can go there and find it as well. Somebody sent me a comment saying you really couldn't find the topic material on iTunes. It's only listed by the date. If you want it on iTunes, the workaround is to go to our podcast page or our radio page. That way you see the date and the topic material. You know which one you want. You go to iTunes and snatch that date up, and you're good to go. So – what else do I have to deal with administratively? We got a Facebook fan page. We've got a Twitter feed. We've got a LinkedIn group. They've all been around for a while. We got about 16,000 fans on Facebook, several thousand people following us on Twitter. And I can't even tell you how many people in our LinkedIn group now. I haven't kept track. It's several hundred, if not several thousand, easy. Please like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm Frank Borelli on LinkedIn. Send me the request to join our group, our Officer.com group on LinkedIn, and we'll get you going there as well, Officer.com community. So with all that out of the way, let's get on with our show. And our show today, like I said, is about social media. Now, for me, when I think about social media and when it kicked off, I hate to say it, I think of America Online. I know some techie folks who never liked AOL, don't like AOL. They view it as an unnecessary resource. I never really saw it that way until I did some contract work for a satellite-based internet connectivity company, and I realized that AOL was like the foyer to the internet. To get into the house, to get into the internet, you should be able to open a door and walk in. With AOL, you had to open a door and step into the foyer, take off your coat, hang it up, get the mud off your shoes, make sure the host of the house was happy with you, and then maybe you could open the door to get to the internet, which was a great business model for AOL, but it was an unnecessary layer of work to get to it. Now, the strength of AOL was the social aspect of it. How many people, that when they first started experimenting with the internet or getting to know the internet, did it via social media, and the social media was a chat room in AOL or on AOL. And to be honest with you, it's been so long since I've been on America Online. It's probably been 15 years. I don't even remember what it all looked like, and it could be entirely different now. But there was these virtual communities where you could go to a chat room and have conversations with people about anything of mutual interest. And that's socializing on the web. We have forums for forever. I mean, how long has PHP Bulletin been out there, vBulletin? They've been out there where you have forums, you start conversations, and anybody who's a member of the forum, total strangers to you, mind you, until you get to know them virtually, could comment, offer you a thought, make a criticism, insult you, spam you, post porn. You never know what was going to show up someplace. It depended on how good the people moderating that arena was, if you will. It's how much time and effort did they have available or put into the forum. Now, there were some folks who started forums just so they could fill them full of advertising and try to make a buck on the advertising. And I'll never fault anybody for trying to make a dollar. At least they're doing it honestly. Those same people, if they spend 15 minutes a day moderating their forums, they might run into some issues because the forums quickly get spammed, filled full of stuff that nobody wants to see. Hate messages get posted, whatever. In 15 minutes a day, you can't do it. By the same token, if you're one person, you can't be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So you depend on the members to some extent to moderate themselves. If somebody's doing something stupid, you expect somebody to report it, and then you can go deal with that. This isn't such a big problem. I used to have some forums for my own website, and I had maybe 50 members, and they weren't there to make money. There was no advertising on them. They were there for us to have mutual discussions about preparedness, about firearms, about tactical emergency medicine, stuff like that. This group of people that I knew and trusted, I had met them personally face to face, and we had a virtual environment to hold conversation. It's a different world today where you go someplace and you build a friendship online or a relationship online, or you build darn near anything online with people you've never ever met, might not live anywhere near. I know of two guys who have built this fantastic online friendship, both cops, one's in Honolulu, one's in New York. They've never met face to face. They might someday at Police Week, but they've become like best friends on this one particular forum. And they support each other. They've exchanged so much information about each other that they know each other pretty well, as far as they know. We've come a long way. We've evolved to the point of instant communication via electronic means through the internet. Instant messaging is out there. Every major ISP has it. I mean, Microsoft MSN has how many different types? You can get Hotmail addresses, MSN addresses. Yahoo has email addresses. Google has email addresses. Everybody and their brother has email addresses. Officer.com offers email addresses. You can get your name at officer.com unless it's a really common name and somebody else has already taken it. And we offer email addresses. But all these companies that have instant messaging – And truth be told, I wish Officer.com had instant messaging. It's a boon to the company that hosts it. And when you think about it, their goal is to get you to come to their website and to get you to stay at their website. Well, if you do that through instant messaging, they get to constantly feed you rotating ads. They get to list you as a member. They get to keep you online for however long you're there. It works great for them, even though you're not paying attention to the website. You're using the service they provide to instant message to have conversation with other people that you know online. It's a heck of a business leveraging tool, if you will. It's also social media. Some people have the impression that instant messaging is never recorded, that it's never cataloged. That's true, and that's not true. Some instant messaging services do, some don't. If you're under the impression that yours doesn't, I would tell you to triple check. Not that you're saying anything you shouldn't be saying, but do you want a permanent ongoing record of something that you type out? Using a screen name or a username connected to you, trackable to your IP address, and that's something else we'll talk about with Krista when she joins us after our first break, is how you track people. We have whole cyber crime investigative services at various police departments. They're not usually big. I mean, they're up and coming because Homeland Security has said cyber crime is a bigger threat now than it used to be. But, you know, I know of a 1,500-man agency. I think they've got four cyber crime investigators now, and that's all they do is stuff on the computer, tracking people who are either predators. They're preying on children on the internet. They're selling something illegally on the internet, and we've all seen where Craigslist has had something listed, and we just go, really? People put that on the internet? They investigate fraud that's committed via the internet, and certainly when you deal with anything on the internet, you have to worry about securing your personal data. You know, identity theft is a problem, and when you don't know the person at the other end of the computer, there should be a limit to how much you trust them. I mean, there's got to be a paranoia factor there that you know and appreciate. So we're going to talk about all of that and more when Ms. Miller joins us on the show. We're going to talk about the history of social media more. We're going to talk about forums more. We're going to talk about how agencies today are leveraging social media as communications tools to help them communicate with their communities that they provide service to. We're going to talk about how it's used for Amber Alerts, getting the word out about lost or missing children. We're going to talk about how social media is part of the background investigation process and internal investigations, which some of us aren't too happy about, but we need to be aware of it. We're going to talk about social media used as evidence and supporting or hindering criminal investigations. So all of that is on our agenda. I don't know where the conversation is going to go with Krista, but she'll be back with us after this break, and we will delve into social media deeper.
Get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
In your fairy tale to make your zing come true.
I love it.
Debbie Glickman and Deanna Cohen know it. Join these soul sisters on toginet.com. Believe in your fairy tale to make your zing come true. Showcases two sides. One, to help entrepreneurs showcase their products and tell their story of their happily ever after. And two, to interview people who have realized their own fairy tale and doing something to benefit others. This show is here to help folks who have an idea and want to get it off the ground, as well as to inspire people to make the world a better place by doing something extraordinary or out of the box to help others. Both of these entrepreneurs have their own businesses and websites. With more information on their passions and successes, first for Debbie, fairytalewishesinc.com, and for Deanna, thenextbigzing.com. Believe in your fairy tale to make your zing come true with the Soul Sisters, Debbie Glickman and Deanna Cohen on toginet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio. powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com, and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back to Officer Radio on Officer.com. If the music ever stops, there we go. Welcome back, Officer Radio on Officer.com. I'm Frank Borelli. We're talking about social media today, and joining us momentarily is Ms. Krista Miller, our social media expert. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 866-404-6519. Or you can email me a comment, frankborelli@officer.com, and I will check that regularly and address any questions that I get in, or I will forward them to Ms. Miller via the radio show, and she'll fill them in. So let's get into this. Krista, how are you today, ma'am?
I am fine, Frank. How are you?
I am good. I actually can't – I'm having one of those days. I'm really glad to be doing the radio show because it takes me out of everything else for an hour and gives me, you know, just that mental escape. So I'm really enjoying this. But it occurs to me that that's what people do with social media as well. And since that's what we're going to talk about today, let's go. I mentioned America Online right before the break, or a few minutes before the break. To me, that's where it all started. Was there something out there before that that we could call social media?
Usenet, I think, around the same time. Admittedly, I was not using these tools when they first came out. We didn't have AOL in my home. But I did have Usenet in college. I was on a number of those groups, and those got interesting and still are interesting in not very good ways. And then obviously chat rooms, instant messaging, and so on that not long after. By the way, I was in college between 1993 and 1997. So, you know, just to give you an idea of the time frame. And then not long after that, I think those started to give way a little bit more to the forums and listservs, which was another aspect of social media 101, or 1.0 rather, you know, since we're in the 2.0.
Okay. Well, it gives me a better opinion of you that you were never on America Online. I won't hold against you the fact that you're at least 10 years younger than I am. Because
I'm 12 years younger than my husband, so I get that a lot.
I just you're talking about when you were in college in the 90s, and I'm thinking, wow, okay. You know, I got out of the Army in 85, so
I get crap from my husband because I was 4 when he was 16 learning to drive. So you know.
Alrighty then. We'll have him on the show when we talk about robbing the cradle, but that's a different topic. you know, after AOL, I mean, obviously social media has been around a long time. I've been around longer than it has. You've been around longer than it has. But we have cops that are coming on the street today that are 21, 22, 23 years old. And social media has been a reality in their life since they learned how to talk.
Yep.
Can you think of anything off the top of your head that really – where social media really makes a difference in a person's day if it's always been a part of it versus they've learned to grow into it?
Being a digital immigrant, it's harder for me to relate to those kinds of questions. I mean, I certainly use it as a brain break. I'm a, you know, being a writer, primarily, you know, there are times that I need the break, from thinking, and from writing and just all of the stuff that goes into those activities where, I do need to know what's going on with the outside world. And part of it is work related as well, because, you know, I do manage some social accounts on behalf of clients. And so, you know, I'll take a break from writing after 45 minutes, log into Twitter, make sure nobody's beating us over the head, you know, jump into a conversation or two with, you know, some people, you know, depending on what they're talking about at the time. And I tend to think that younger generations use it a little bit differently, or maybe they don't. I'm admittedly not terribly tapped into younger generations, especially younger police officers, which is something I should probably change at some point.
Well, let me ask you something, because you said something that takes me by surprise.
Sure.
I know Twitter, and we're getting a little bit ahead of the game. I know Twitter, you can tweet specifically, and it still sounds weird to me to say that. I'm going to tweet something. You can tweet something specifically to someone, mm-hmm. and they can do that back. So you can have a conversation on Twitter. Was that originally the purpose, or was Twitter supposed to be like a microblogging site where you could just tell everybody who subscribed to your feed what you were doing every moment of every day?
I think Twitter, going back to the history of social media and how the whole thing started, I think that that something that's important to remember is that smartphones played a very large part in the development of social media. I think that, and I don't know this for sure, but it would seem to me, based on the brevity of social media or Twitter posts rather, that it evolved from the idea of text messaging. You know, whether you're text messaging one friend or multiple friends, you know, at that point, instead of text messaging just 5 or 10 friends, you know, text message more than that, only you're not text messaging, you're putting it publicly over the internet. Again, that's a guess as to how that started. But I've been on Twitter since late 2008. I've had multiple conversations with, you know, not just one person at a time, but multiple people at a time. You know, and they can get into quite extended conversations. It's not just, you know, little one-off comments. I mean, you can get pretty deep with some go ahead.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. Let me ask you something, because this kind of bothers me. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. I've been around a long time. The idea of using a phone to type on, I do it. I'm guilty. I never texted until I had teenage kids who had cell phones, and then I texted because that was an easy way to communicate with them. But the idea of a phone that you don't talk on, you type into, what the hell were we thinking? I mean – this seems like a step backwards in the use of technology to me. Am I just that narrow-minded, or are we going the wrong direction, or what?
I think it's just it builds in mobility, really, and I think that's how we've evolved, or how especially the younger generations, you know, digital natives, have evolved is that they just want to be able to communicate with each other on the go. And I certainly, the more I've traveled 5 times this year, and I still don't think that I'm at the point where I need a smartphone for my business or my life, my personal life. But you know, there are times when I'm traveling that I'm like, gee, you know, it sure would be nice to have an iPhone or you know, something where I can, you know, tweet right from the airport or whatever. So, you know, reach out to my friends and not feel so isolated. And I think that's a large part of it. I don't know, you know, you asked about whether Twitter was for broadcasting what you're doing to friends. I don't think it was ever about broadcasting. I think it was about reaching out and not feeling isolated, which I think is without getting into very deep sociological aspects, I think that that's a symptom of some aspects of some generation. I mean, I was a latchkey kid, and I think a lot of kids these days, I think the vast majority of kids these days are latchkey kids. And so when you don't have those more constant connections with people, then, you know, then you're able to reach out and know that somebody is there.
Oh, yeah. And no doubt, if my son was a latchkey kid, I would want him to have the capability of coming in the house, locking the door behind him, and either getting on his computer or his phone or whatever and sending me a text that, Dad, I'm home. Everything's good. I'm going to get a snack and do my homework. I don't have any homework. I'm playing video games. You can yell at me when you get home, whatever. But, okay, didn't even mean to go off in that whole direction. It's just kind of how things evolved. And I do believe I warned you before the show. It's like having a conversation over a couple of beers. It tends to go different places. Every now and then I'll try to bring it back on track, which is one of those moments. So after AOL, as far as I can remember, the next big thing was MySpace. And I had people who laughed at me because I refused to have a MySpace page until I got one for my business. I had a consulting company, and I built – and it may still be there. I don't know. I haven't been on MySpace in a decade or years or whatever, but I might actually still have a MySpace page and not even be thinking about it. But what – you know, the kind of the standard in social media today is Facebook. What's the big difference? What did MySpace not do correctly that Facebook blew it out of the water so well?
I think the thing with MySpace was the clutter quotient. I had a MySpace page briefly back when before I got into public relations. I was trying to promote my fiction writing or the fiction writing aspect of my writing activities, and I briefly had a MySpace page. Never got into it because I found it too cluttered. The interface was terrible in my opinion, and I don't like Facebook either. Just for the record. But I do think from an interface standpoint, it's cleaner. I think that some of the social features like chat are better. it made it easier to see threaded comments, for instance. Like, you weren't scrolling through hundreds and hundreds of comments on this one page for your MySpace account, and private messaging was just I think that the main thing was the interface issues.
Okay.
Between the two, yeah.
And then so we got through MySpace, and now we have Facebook, and we have Twitter, and we have Nixel, and we have LinkedIn, and we have, you know, a plethora now of social media options.
LinkedIn, actually, it's interesting you should mention that. That's actually one of the older ones. I think it was somewhere around the time that Facebook, or probably even before Facebook started. But and initially, it's a good example of the way that that a social network evolves to adapt to the way that to the newer social networks that are coming on the scene. Eventually, LinkedIn started as a way to be basically a Rolodex of your professional contacts, and then it's added in features as Facebook and Twitter have grown more popular. There's a lot of features that I think that I'm seeing the time warnings here that I probably don't have time to go into, but it is one of the older ones, and I think that watching it adapt and evolve is one of the more interesting aspects of social media today.
Okay. Well, two things on the time warnings, and I'm glad you're actually seeing them. That's just the producer letting us know how long we have until he plays the break, and he will play the break at the specified time, no matter what we're saying or how much many more seconds we need. When that time comes, it's done, and he'll cut us off. So that's the time till the break's coming up. We can always come back to this conversation after the break. But I'm glad you shared that about LinkedIn. I never thought I always did when I first got involved with it. I viewed it as that virtual Rolodex, if you will. But the people that I had in my normal Rolodex weren't on LinkedIn, so it seemed kind of academic to try to use it. Now, of course, if you're in a business, if you're trying to communicate and you don't have LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, you might as well not be competing in the business place. But we're going to come back to that. We have 30 seconds. I want to thank you for joining us on the show. Hang out. We'll be back after the break. For the listeners, I want to remind you can call in 866-404-6519 if you have a question for me or for Krista, or if you want to email me a comment to frankborelli@officer.com. We're going to be right back talking about social media with Krista Miller. Be right back.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. You've seen and heard about entrepreneurs and business owners who seem to exuberate an amazing amount of passion and love for their business, and they're full of high energy. What inspires that? What's the formula? Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central Time for the Business Lovemaker Show with your host, Sue Whitaker. Sue will share approaches, stories, and strategies on how to boost your business's success by falling in love with your business. Learn how to truly connect with your business. Sue Whitaker, the host of the Business Lovemaker Show, is a lifelong entrepreneur, author, speaker, and business leader. You'll be entertained by Sue and her guests from around the world and call-ins from listeners like you with a chance to share and learn from one another. For more on Sue, her book and system, and the show, check out her website, suewhitaker.com. It's time for you to fall in love with your business. It's time for you to become a business lovemaker. Join us Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Central for the Business Lovemaker with your host, Sue Whitaker, on toginet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit officerworldexpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Officer Radio on Officer.com. I'm Frank Borelli, and we're joined by Miss Krista Miller, a social media expert who is having a lot of fun talking to us today. The thing that our listeners don't get to see is the behind-the-scenes producer-guest conversations that happen using a social media tool, I guess, if Skype is a social media tool. If you guys could see what was going on behind the scenes, you'd be spraying soda out your nose. It'd be hilarious. If you have a comment, give us a call, 866-404-6519. Send me an email, frankborelli@officer.com. Now, before we went to the break, Krista, you were talking about LinkedIn and how they've evolved. Go back to that. Say what you were worried about not having enough time to say before.
Before the music came in over my voice. And
well, and mine too. Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, no, it pretty much, you know, like I was saying, it started out as a Rolodex for professional contacts. And then as it went along, you know, Facebook came about, or rather Facebook opened to the public. Originally, it was a social network only for college students. You had to have a .edu email address to use
that.
What's that?
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It did. And then they finally opened. I can't remember the year that it opened up to the public, at which point I did not jump on. it was just not something that interested me at that time. But, you know, that those features became available. Twitter gained in popularity, and so on. And so LinkedIn started to adapt to that. You know, now you're able to post status updates, not just for yourself, but also for your organization. That was a feature that was just added in the last couple of weeks, actually. You're able to update, you know, what you're reading, what publications you've written, you know, any slide presentations that you've given at conferences. And so it's become much more dynamic. It's allowed for more multimedia, which is something that the social networking sites are doing with I said web 1.0 before, and this is what makes for web 2.0 is really the mashup, the aggregation of all the different social elements like instant messaging, multimedia, forums, conversations, you know, just all of that comes together in these different sites, and services for people. So,
okay. Well, so we had LinkedIn that evolved that way. We've had Facebook that's evolved. We, like I said, we're talking on Skype. I assume it's kind of a social media site, but really,
yeah.
I mean, to me it is and it isn't. Yeah, I can post what I'm doing at the moment, but who really uses it for anything but free phone calls?
Yeah, well, I mean, but it does make conferencing easy. You know, it's generally a pain in the neck either to have to dial into a conference bridge or to add somebody into a conference call when you're already in session with somebody. But Skype makes it easy to do that. The other thing is you can meet more people that way. You know, when you're conferenced in. I mean, I did a podcast a few months ago where there were, I think, 7 different people on the call, and then as we were talking, I was adding in all of these different contacts that I hadn't had before and wouldn't have had their contacts otherwise. The one thing Skype doesn't do is it doesn't allow you to see who your contacts are following, who else they're connected to. And so it's a little bit more difficult to connect directly with people that way. But
okay.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. So let's move on to pretty much where we are today, if you will. We've got all of these social media outlets. We have Facebook, we have Nixel, we have Twitter, we have Skype, we have LinkedIn. I'm sure there's some that I've forgotten, because I go to one website and it gives you like 40 different options for how you want to share something with other contacts and stuff. But those are the big ones in my world. I could be completely wrong. I know that law enforcement agencies tend to use Nixel a lot, and it's very specific to law enforcement. Can you talk about that a minute? Because some people listening may not be familiar with it.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a free tool, at least as far as I know. At one point, it had gone to a paid model, and since then, I got caught up on other projects, and I haven't really had a chance to check in with the status of that. But I know a lot of agencies are still using it, even when it was a paid model, they kept with it. And it's more, actually, I wouldn't call it a social tool. I would call it a broadcast tool that leverages social media, like okay. Twitter and Facebook and even text messaging via phones and so on. But it's not strictly a social tool because it doesn't allow for two-way interaction that you would ordinarily associate with social.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that there was no back feed from the community, that it was only a broadcast tool. So that clarifies that for me, and I appreciate it. Now, and I'm working on this list of stuff, some of the things I want to make sure we try to talk about. Obviously, agencies are leveraging all these social media outlets for distribution of information to the community. What percentage of them do you think are letting that backflow of information or welcoming that backflow of information? Any idea?
Yeah, actually, IACP social media site did a survey in September, published a survey in September about that, and it's looking like the flow of information back about, what was it, 47%? I'm looking sideways at the chart on the screen here. 47% or so of communities are actually using it for community outreach and citizen engagement, which is a decent percentage. I think that even as little as a year or two ago, most agencies were still using it for broadcast.
Right.
And I do see one of the things that's interesting about the survey that I wanted to bring up is there's a fair amount on here about crime prevention activities and notifying the public of disaster issues or crime issues, soliciting tips on crimes and so on. And so there is a fair degree of engagement. However, only 32% of agencies are using social tools for listening or monitoring. And that stuck out at me because, you know, communication being a two-way street, you want to be listening. I mean, you don't want to just be listening for the crime tips. You also want to be listening for other things as well. And the thing that the report doesn't get into, you know, the full report, just it has the questions that IACP asked and so on, is why that is. And that's something that I hope that they will cover in coming months. Is it a resource issue? Is it because the citizens aren't talking about the agency to the extent that might be expected? You know, just things like that. I would be really interested to find out what more about the listening issue on social media. I put it that way.
Let me ask you something. This is a report IACP did, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so it's on their website probably?
It's on IACPsocialmedia.org, which is a really good resource, by the way, because it has
a lot of
policies.
That was what I wanted to know. I wanted the listeners to be able to hear that, IACPsocialmedia.org, because I didn't even know it existed.
Okay.
You should see me. I'm sitting at my doing this show, and I'm talking with my hands and being all kinds of expressive, and there's nobody here to appreciate it. So IACPsocialmedia.org, excellent resource for information about social media. Moving on. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say in many different ways. I mean, because it's not just that it's not just IACP pushing information out. It's also they have a blog where they've got their PIO experts, police chiefs, command staff, et cetera, talking about how they actually deploy social tools in their organizations. And I think that that's really important because there's so much information out there, especially from a business standpoint, about how to use social media that I think it's really important for law enforcement agencies to understand not just how to use it for government uses, but specifically in law enforcement contexts. And so, you know, you've got PIOs on there from Boise, Idaho, Richmond, Virginia, I think Baltimore, although I'm not sure about that, and Toronto Police in Canada. Just a number of resources talking about actual deployment. And then also they have on the site, they have model policies for various, employee use of social media, I think investigations and you know, things like that. So it's a really good, and they continue to build it out. I mean, I think the site has really grown over since it went live, which I think was just about a year, 18 months ago. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I know we're going to come up to another break here before too long. You'll see the warning when I do. But speaking of all that backflow, the back and forth, is I saw a news report not that long ago. It was one of these investigations. Somebody was missing. I think it was in Wisconsin. And They started a Facebook page so that anybody who had any tips or leads or information or whatever could give that back to the police department. And the good news was that it got a lot of attention. The bad news was that they then needed the manpower to sort through the 20,000 tips they got in 48 hours from everybody and their brother who wanted to participate and be helpful. Your opinion, good, bad, and different, leveraging social media for investigative purposes in situations like that?
I think, and not having all of the information about what went into that decision, but I think that that it's important for any agency, any investigator, to have goals, to know what they want to use the tools for. You know, first of all, who in their community is using which tools? I was just talking to the PIO for the Victoria, British Columbia Police Department, who said, you know, in his community, Twitter is a big tool, not Facebook or any of the others, but Twitter. Okay. And so a lot of their information goes out over Twitter. And so, you know, once you've narrowed down what the police or what the people in your community are using, what do you want them to do? You know, do you want to potentially get 20,000 tips, or how are you going to sift through that? And this goes back to something that that I hear a lot of digital forensics experts that I work with talking about, which is when you have an examination, you know, that you do need the goals for the investigation. How deep do you want to go? You know, what if you get a spinoff? You know, you find information that you didn't expect to find or whatever. And then also something else that they use, because they're dealing with large amounts of information as well on, you know, larger hard drives and storage space. Is to have specific keywords that they're using. So, you know, if you're in, for instance, if you're using social media for intelligence collection, you're not even soliciting anything, but you are kind of out there looking for what they call open source intelligence, to know what keywords you want to be searching on, and to be able to set up what you need to set up effectively, whether it's Google Alerts or, you know, a Twitter search or that sort of thing. So I do think that having those goals, though, is the key thing, and then knowing what you want from your audience.
Okay. Then before we go to the break, we're going to leave that there. When we come back from the break, I want to talk with you about how social media kind of haunts police officers today. I mean, I know people who avoid it religiously because they don't want any extra record of their opinion or something they've said, but mm-hmm. they'll be on Facebook. They won't be on the forums for whatever reason, or they'll be on forums, but not on Facebook. So I want to talk about that when we come back, social media being used in background investigations and internal investigations. And then whether or not it's being used, I know it is, as evidence or supporting hindering criminal investigations. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break, where we're talking to Krista Miller about social media. This is Officer Radio on officer.com, and we'll be right back.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list. Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for you to be a rock star. Get ready to rock with Rock Talk and Craig Deswald, and learn how to achieve rock star status in your industry every Tuesday afternoon at 2, 1 Central on TogiNet.com. Craig Deswald is the creator of the Rock Star System for Success. Craig will share easy tips and strategies on how entrepreneurs and businesses can use outside-the-box marketing strategies to stand out from the competition. Each high-energy show will feature interviews with celebrity rock stars as well as business rock stars. For more on Craig, the show, and the Rockstar Marketing Boot Camps, check out the website, CraigDuswalt.com, so you can learn how to be perceived as an expert and celebrity in your field, so more people come to you to buy your services and products. Then, get ready to be a rock star with Rock Talk and Craig Duswalt, Tuesday afternoons at 2, 1 Central on TruggyNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Hello, folks, and welcome back. This is Frank Borelli. We're on Officer Radio with Krista Miller talking about social media. And again, if you guys could see all the back end, you'd understand that I've made Krista nervous because I talked about internal affairs investigations, and I certainly didn't mean to do that. And Krista, it's not a big deal. I know that there are agencies now that are including social media investigation as part of their background investigation. I don't know how much you know about background investigations, but when an officer goes to get hired at an agency, you know, they want to know that they're reliable, honest, you know, not bankrupt, not violent, not criminals. But one of the things they're looking for now is defensibility in court. And if you've got a guy who's been on Facebook who's made racist comments, that's a part of a record now, and somebody can you know, destroy a case using that information from Facebook. Or if he's tweeted about how he wanted to really kick somebody's butt, and then lo and behold, somebody gets their butt kicked, this becomes criminal evidence that can be used against him because he said he wanted to do that. So I know that kind of stuff is going on. I didn't know, number one, if you were aware of it. Number two, if you knew how prevalent it was.
Yeah, I did know that it was going on because, you know, you do see news reports to an unfortunately regular extent about that happening. And I think that rather than frame it in a social media context, I think it's important to frame it in terms of what police commanders need to be thinking about when they recruit and then as they're as they're going through with you know, during the officer's employment. It's not that you can just slap a policy in place. I mean, policies are important and they're good to have, but they're not going to solve all the problems. They're not, you know, the officers are posting those things, number one, because they don't have very good judgment, which is that's already a problem, and also that there may be other problems that they're having on the job, you know, depression or extra anxiety or anger management issues, things like that I think that human resources and law enforcement agencies need to be thinking about, because social media doesn't cause the problems, it amplifies the problems that are already there.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to say this, because I don't just work for Officer.com, okay?
Right.
I've had 7 books published, and 2 of those books are anthologies of articles that I've written about everything from preparedness to selecting, you know, a personal handgun for defense to what I like to call patriotic topics about, you know, whether or not we should have the Pledge of Allegiance mandated every day in school and, you know, should it be a crime not to stand up during the national anthem. And I'm a fairly opinionated person, in case you hadn't realized that already. And there's not a lot of filter between my brain and my mouth, which is why it took me 23 years to make lieutenant. But look, I my bigger challenge is if I get on Facebook, and I understand it's a public venue because it's open to the world to some extent, only the people that are my friends, if I'm smart and I take care of my privacy settings, only my friends see what I say on Facebook. And if I say something on Facebook to them, to me, that's the same thing as sitting at my kitchen table having a conversation with those friends, and I make the comment that I believe in the death penalty strongly. If I say it on Facebook, that can create a problem for me in a court proceeding down the road, because somebody's going to challenge my outlook or my perception about crime and enforcement and the death penalty and how hungry I am to kill criminals versus, you know, if I say to my kitchen table, who really cares? You know, until one of my friends decides they want to come out of the closet and go, hey, Borelli said this, da-da-da-da-da. My challenge is that as a police officer, I don't think what we say on a personal page – should be used against us in a public venue. It should be private conversation, just like texting, just like tweeting. But then it's a matter of record, and that's where it bites us in the butt.
Well, also, I think it goes back to policy. One of the things that I was reading before I came on the show was something, again, IACP report about cyber vetting, and that courts have ruled that government agencies do have not just the right, but the responsibility to place limitations on their employees' free speech to an extent that other employers don't. It comes back to public interest and this is even in text messages as well. There's a case in California of a police officer, I think it was a group of officers that were using their either pagers or cell phones to get text messages that were sexual in nature while they were on duty. And they argued that because
hold the phone though. Are we talking about departmentally issued pagers and cell phones, or are we talking about private?
I think it was either that they were department issued or they were, I think that it was department issued, and then they had a contract with the city to pay the agency back
I don't have a problem with that. If it's an agency owned and issued cell phone or pager, then of course I'm an idiot if I don't think that they have access to that stuff and I have to maintain professional demeanor. Here's my challenge: when it's my own personal cell phone and my wife sexts me while I'm working the street and then I get jammed for unprofessional conduct, I take issue with that. That's personal. That's private. That's
nothing
to do with the agency.
It depends on the unprofessional conduct, because if something goes down while you're having the steamy conversation with your wife while you're on duty and the department gets sued as a result of it, then your phone is discoverable, which is a part of a trend called consumerization of IT, which is something that that I've been researching in conjunction with some of the stuff my clients are doing.
You should write an article about that. Cops need to know this stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Because what happens is this is happening a lot in the business world already. I think it's only a matter of time before it starts to happen with law enforcement agencies as well, is that when there is a litigation regarding whatever, whether it's a data breach or just something else, sexual harassment in a company or any organization, the devices, whether they're company issued, increasingly personal devices are discoverable. All the data on them are discoverable, which means cell phone forensics, computer forensics, a process called e-discovery that encompasses the digital forensic procedures on these devices. And so that stuff does come out. Time and date stamps become important in cases like the one you're describing, the hypothetical. All of that can become very important in a legal case, whether it's a civil or a criminal.
So how do we protect ourselves? I mean, here I am. I'm a professional police officer. I've been in the business 10 years. I've gotten into Facebook because it lets me keep in track. At least lets me stay in touch with my friends. I'll make it very personal. I'm on Facebook because I've got a daughter-in-law that's in the Marine Corps and she's deployed. I've got a son who's fresh out of the Marine Corps, lives several states away. I've got a daughter who's an Army wife who's halfway across the country. I've got a son-in-law who's in Afghanistan. Facebook is a communications tool that I use with them. What you're telling me is if I text with them, if on duty or has any kind of impact at all, no matter how private it is, if it's something that may impact an investigation or maybe relevant in an investigation on Facebook, all of this stuff is discoverable, even though it is private between family members. If there's any way somebody can say it's applicable to an investigation, that's discoverable.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
I don't think that it would necessarily be in every single case. I mean, the way it would have to come out, like a judge would have to order a litigation hold on whatever kind of documents. And that would be, part of the arguments that the attorneys make. We need this, this, and this. And the judge would say, yeah, you can have that, but you can't have that. Stuff like that. So it's not always going to be true, but it's probably, especially, again, if they do think and they have reason to believe that it affects an investigation or a suit.
I just saw a news article this morning where a judge has ordered a husband and wife who are in the midst of a separation and divorce to exchange their usernames and passwords for Facebook so that everything they've done can be taken into consideration during the divorce proceedings, because one half is contending that the other half is having an online affair. Mm-hmm. And so the judge ordered them to swap usernames and passwords. And the lawyers did what lawyers do. They said, absolutely, give them your username and password. As soon as you get home, change your password. I mean, duh. But it just – I guess I'm shocked, appalled. I don't know what the right word is. Where did we lose our privacy, and do we have any reasonable expectation of privacy if we're using a social media form?
No, because you know you pointed out before you can't trust your friends. You can't trust your friends of friends. You know that friends of mine that talk to high school students and middle school students about online privacy issues will talk about. They'll talk to the kids about, you know, all right, so you decided to block this one friend. Well, what if she's over at your other friend's house staring over her shoulder as, you know, she's looking through your profile, stuff like that. I don't think that you can have any expectation of privacy. And I think what that means is instead of focusing on all the negative stuff, I think it's important for professionals to focus on what they can do. You know, because I mean, it's and there's two sides of that. There's figuring out how you want to advance your career and how to use these tools to advance your career. And then there's also the agency taking a hard look at its own policies and its own practices and saying, okay, look, everybody's stupid sometimes. You know, I've done stupid stuff. You can either be inadvertently stupid. You can choose unwisely. You know, that happens. It's, you know, we're humans. We're fallible. The agency at that point has to decide whether and how transparent it's going to be about those mistakes that were made, about the things that it's going to do to fix those mistakes, whether it's better training for officers or, you know, sit down discussions with the community, depending on how much impact the statements had on the community, stuff like that, I think becomes very important. And I think that can build trust on the employee level, can build trust with their managers and their and their fellow employees, and then on the community level, build trust back up with the community. And that's a really overgeneralized statement because there's a lot more that goes into those dynamics than just using.
And none of that addresses what courts can order or what they can't, or you know. And no matter what, if a court orders something that is a violation of the First Amendment, we don't find that out until all the damage is done and it's contested a year and a half, 2 years down the road. So, if you want to be ultimate in paranoia, and we're in our last minutes, we're going to have to shut this down. But if you want to be the ultimate in paranoid, you just don't use social media. And the only thing anybody can ever do is try to record you when you make a statement.
Yeah, I would actually say that you shouldn't not use social media either. I was reading an article the other day from somebody that I've worked with on corrections.com about how safe are online officers really. And I can send you that link if you want because it is interesting. I think it's at least important to have an idea of what's going on, you know, have a Google alert on your name and you know, just you know, even have accounts that are in your name so that nobody can
– Krista, I hate to cut you off, but he's going to cut us off. Put it in an article. Listeners, thank you for being with us on Officer Radio, hosted by Officer.com. We won't be here next week.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio.